Neil deGrasse Tyson is an astrophysicist and director of the Hayden Planetarium. His newest book is The Pluto Files, The Rise and Fall of America's Favorite Planet. Hello, sir. How are you doing today?
Hello. Doing well, thanks.
Good. I appreciate you giving us some time today.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, excellent. All right. Well, first, I wanted to mention I caught you on Stargate Atlantis with you and Bill Nye. Yes. That was great. It looked like you guys had a lot of
day job.
I thought you guys looked like you had a good time.
Yeah, I restricted mine to just kind of a cameo. Bill did the whole episode.
So yeah.
He was much more ambitious than I was.
Well, you did fine. Mm-hmm. You appeared on a couple times in previous years on the Universe on the History Channel.
I was in the first two seasons, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I've been watching that, and it's been eye opening. I've had a really good time learning things I had never had any idea of.
So it's an excellent update on what's going on in the cosmos.
So I want to talk to you about your new book, The Pluto Files. It's all about something that you kind of inadvertently sort of started the ball rolling as far as in the public eye.
Yeah, that's the way to say it. It was definitely inadvertent.
Yeah.
And all we did was create a new exhibit here in New York. This is back in 2000 now.
Mm-hmm.
And in that exhibit, the solar system was, we reorganized it. Rather than as an enumeration of planets, we just grouped objects by similar properties. So we put the small rocky planets, Mercury, Venus, Earth, and Mars, together and chatted about them as a group, and then the asteroid belt, and then the gas giants, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune.
Right.
And right in the late 90s, other objects in the outer solar system were being discovered that were kind of icy like Pluto and had weird tipped orbits like Pluto. And so we saw the trend line and decided, since we were spending a lot of money and cutting metal, you don't want your exhibit to go out of relevance as soon as you've completed it.
Right.
So we looked at the trend line and saw that a new swath of real estate was opening up in the outer solar system and grouped Pluto with its icy brethren. And that's what we did. And I thought that was a pretty innocent step to take.
Right.
Until a year later, a journalist for the New York Times decides to make a page one story. And it says, Pluto not a planet, only in New York. And then my life went to hell.
Yeah. Did you kind of feel a little, I mean, the IAU, the International Astronomical Union, it pretty much started talking about the idea of the demotion of Pluto. But you really became kind of the pariah, maybe, might be the word?
Well, it's because, like I said, we were cutting metal. Mm-hmm. Cutting metal in an expensive exhibit. So we had the need to think this through much earlier than most people did.
Right.
Certainly most even in the professional community. And so all the thinking that went on over this 5 years or so, 6 years, between when we opened our exhibit and the vote that was taken by the IAU, all the thinking that everyone else did, we did in between 1997 and 2000.
Mm-hmm.
So I just sat and watched people, you know, anguish over the possibility of demotion, but at the end realized that this is the right path. But before I even call that the right path, let me just say we didn't demote Pluto. All we did was group it with other
objects
of like properties.
Right, we didn't say it wasn't a planet.
At no point did we say there are only 8 planets now. You know, go forth and spread this word. At no point did we say Pluto's too small to make it in New York. You know, none of this went on, and we were stereotyped that way. But that's not what actually happened. So, in the IAU voted, they actually voted a new definition of the word planet that excluded Pluto, leaving 8 planets. So that's where the damage was done, if you want to call it. You want to think of it in that context. And people called us up and said, okay, now with the new vote, will you have to change your exhibit? No, because we never counted planets in the first place.
Right.
Oh, we just discovered 3 new round objects in the outer solar system. Do you have to change your exhibit? No, those are just the Kuiper Belt icy comets in the outer solar system. And so...
So you're really thinking ahead, yeah.
We're thinking ahead. And what we wanted to do in this, and I've saved it for the last chapter of the book, was try to get people to think differently about the contents of the solar system. Don't think of it as the enumeration of objects whose properties you memorize.
Right.
Think of it as as a families of objects of like properties that now you can compare and contrast with other families.
Right. Okay.
It's much more sort of scientifically illuminating.
Yeah.
You got teachers giving exams saying, "What is the name of the fifth planet from the sun?" There's no science in that.
Yeah, that's just rote memorization, right?
They're not entirely to blame. You know, it's my professional community, by and large, that writes the textbooks that presented it that way.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to appeal to educators and scientists alike that there's a more enlightened, pedagogically enlightened way to present the information.
And there's even more talk with the new administration of science being coming back to the forefront.
It was there in the speech.
So it was there in the speech. We got our fingers crossed. That's right.
It was right there. And there are two kinds of science. One of them is, well, you see a problem in front of you and you say, okay, scientists, fix that problem. But really, that's the job of the engineers.
Right.
What the scientist does is on a different time scale where the investment return has to have greater foresight in terms of when you reap the benefits of that investment.
Mm-hmm.
And that time delay is typically longer than an election cycle. So as a president, you need to have that vision
mm-hmm.
that you're protecting the future of your nation by the investments in science and technology today.
Well, I certainly got my fingers crossed.
Yeah, and President Obama has a lot on his plate. So in the end, we'll have to pay close attention to how the priorities end up getting checked off. And my hope is that he's not distracted by putting Band-Aids on problems when, at the end of the day, it's the solution to the problem in the first place that also needs to be sought. And you only get that from the longer-term investments in fundamental science.
So out of all of this, where do you think, I mean, do you have like kind of a, do you, if you had to put your money on, you know, an area that we think the next big thing is going to come out of?
I think we're going to find life on Mars.
Really? You think so?
The solar system. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I have high expectations for that.
Mm-hmm.
And we just discovered methane coming out of vents
right.
on the cliff faces of Mars. And methane is, you can make it in ways that don't involve biology, but biology,
mm-hmm.
you get it for free.
Right.
By using microbes that thrive anaerobically. So that's why you find these same microbes in the digestive tracts, deep in the digestive tracts of farm animals, where there is no oxygen. And methane is a byproduct of that.
Mm-hmm.
So methane is the active ingredient in farm animal flatulence. So it's not that we think there are farm animals on Mars. It's that we think that the same microbial action that's going on in the intestinal tracts of farm animals may be going on in the aquifers of Mars.
Do you have any interest in the Large Hadron Collider? You think anything's going to...
I think any time you turn on a machine that's testing nature at the most extreme limits you've ever looked,
mm-hmm.
then you're going to discover something. We've known that with telescopes. The bigger the telescope, unlike some other parts of life, in astrophysics, bigger is better.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And so in the universe, you want the bigger telescope. Bigger telescopes see dimmer things. And so every time you bring a big telescope online, you will discover things you hadn't known was there before. It's that simple. Anytime in physics, you hang out in energy levels no one had ever reached before,
mm-hmm.
you will discover new things about the properties of matter on its smallest and most fundamental levels.
Mm-hmm.
So I have high hopes for what will finally come out of that. I think they're doing some engineering runs right now.
Yep. Yeah, I think they're supposed to bring it back online next month, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it's the most complex piece of machinery ever built, so
right.
You got to give them some slack.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no. The fact that they were able to turn it on at all, I was, you know.
I'm amazed myself. Okay, where's the on switch?
Right. Yeah. And they didn't destroy the planet. So,
right.
You know,
oh, yeah.
You can't ask for more than that.
However, that week that they tested it and turned on the switch and everyone was worried about black holes
right.
heating the Earth, that was the same week that the markets collapsed on Wall Street. So I think it did make a black hole, and black hole landed on Wall Street. That's what happened.
That all the money and mortgages and everything went right down it.
Right in. Don't tell anybody, but that's my new theory.
That's your new theory. That'll be the subject of your next book. Well, sir, I want to thank you very much for giving me some time today.
Okay, well, good luck with this, and thanks for your interest.
Oh, no problem. I really enjoyed the book, and I really enjoy every time I can catch you. I've caught you on, you know, the occasional late show or the interview. So always have fun. You are gregarious, and you have a love for your work that definitely shines through when you talk.
Well, it's not hard to love the universe, I think. So
no,
it's not a stretch for me.
No, well, excellent. Right. Well, thank you very much, sir.
All right, take care.
Have a good day.
Bye.
Dr. Tyson's book is available now. Thanks for listening. This is JohnJay.net.